This episode is brought to you in part by Swim. Here's the thing about wishlist apps. Most of them just sit there. A customer saves a product, and then nothing happens. Swim actually activates that data. When someone wishlists a product, you could trigger price drop or back in stock alerts and feed that intent directly into Klaviyo or your CRM. You're not guessing what people want because they've told you. Plus, customers can share wishlists for gifts, and your team can view them to offer personalized service online or in-store. And unlike cart abandonment, wishlist data is permission-based. These are people raising their hand saying, hey, I want this, just not right now. Swim's been around for over a decade. It powers 45,000 stores and installs in about 5 minutes. You could try it for free today at getswim.com/Kurt. That's getswym.com/Kurt. Today on the unofficial Shopify podcast, we're doing a Where Are They Now episode. We're joined again by a serial entrepreneur and a friend of mine who's got $100 million combined revenue across his many e-commerce ventures because he runs a family business with his brother-in-law. They employ over 40 people and they still ship out of their own warehouse, which I respect. Nick Mertz is joining us. He is the co-founder of Pins and Aces. And he was on the show back in June 2023, and that became a fan favorite episode. People loved his candor and advice on what it took to grow what was then, you know, just the fun golf head cover company and is now so much more. They've gone, you know, expanded that product line, grown revenue, added a huge number of wholesale accounts, and even acquired Adele Golf, a legit putter company. And so I want to break it down. I want to get that update. I want to hear what's working and what we broke along the way, because Nick and I have done this together. We've worked on that online in store, and it's been an adventure. And so we're going to talk about it. Nick, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
Okay, so you know, high level, you know, it's been like 18 months. What give us the high level overview on what's new with Pins and Aces in that time?
Yeah, a lot. You know, a lot has changed. A lot also hasn't changed. I think business is pretty simple. You follow kind of a key playbook, which we do. Last time we talked, we're moving into a new building. I remember taking that podcast from, our old building. Everything was moved out. It was kind of the last thing we did was I was taking that call. And you can see behind me is our warehouse. There was someone just putting a box up on that shelf. So we are, you know, proud to have all the distribution and operations out of one facility. So we do that here. And I think, I was just talking to somebody the other day about that of, do you go the 3PL route? Do you not? If you follow us on social media, I hate 3PL, you know, I'm not a big fan of
it.
Why? You know, I understand when I was talking to a guy, you know, if you have one product, one SKU, lower volume, it makes sense. You know, there's a big CapEx component to having your own facility, employing, you know, your operations staff, that can all be alleviated. But I think once you get to a certain kind of break-even point, it actually is more cost-effective to bring it in-house. You know, there's a reason why these 3PL warehouses are hundreds of thousands of square feet, have tons of employees, because they are charging for it, and it makes sense. There's a model where it makes sense. I like it because it's actually a profit center, a revenue center for us, and we can have a higher touch point with the consumer. I think as you get into trying to differentiate and trying to win the customer, controlling a lifetime value with CPAs and CAC through the roof, it's harder to acquire a customer. You really want to make sure that once you have a customer, they're being taken care of, and having that in-house and having the ability to have to fulfill the orders, to have the operations, we can have a higher touch point and include a stock card or an extra item or a handwritten note to the customer. That's all stuff that we can do right here. And I think that's valuable. So there's a lot of factors, and I understand people who are starting up or just starting to get into that scale or growth mode. It's unfeasible. You know, a lot of these e-commerce businesses and people who listen probably are starting out with a single product or a couple products, and they're out of their garage or their home, like I was at one point. And it's really difficult to have a facility to do that. And so 3PL makes sense. But yeah, for us, it's always been, you know, one of our core components of growth and scale is having operations in-house.
You know, and that the fulfillment you do is quick. I see the reports and I've ordered, and it's fast. You know, it's like if I place the order, it's like Amazon, man. 2 days later, it's in my mailbox, which I've always thought, you know, incredible.
Yeah. And for us, I mean, we're in Colorado, so we're based just outside of Denver. So pretty centrally located to get to you in Chicago or, you know, someone on the West Coast, East Coast. It's a good central location for us to fulfill. And you are competing with Amazon. You know, I think the direct consumer customer is now accustomed to that Amazon Prime delivery service where they're getting it in, you know, next day, sometimes that night. You know, I've ordered stuff on Amazon and it's like, hey, it'll be there in 3 hours, you know, so you're competing against that. And so it's really hard to obviously get next day or same day delivery. But if you're within that 2 to 4 day time frame and you can ship it out same day the order comes in, that goes a long way with the customer.
Yeah, no, huge. The when am I going to get my stuff, I think, is like one of the big unspoken concerns people have on any website that's not Amazon, unfortunately.
100%. Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
So last time you were real candid about revenue and numbers. Can you give us the scoreboard? Are we willing to share revenue numbers this time?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, last year we were just under 25 million in top line revenue. This year we're a little bit more conservative, trying to pace the growth a little bit. Want to be right around 30 million in revenue this year between our different brands. So Pins and Aces is the big one. That's the one you focus on. But as you're aware, we have other brands. We have Riptide, we have Adele. We just acquired Sweet Rolls Golf, which is a grip company, which I think is good to talk about too. We can get into that on acquisitions and inorganic growth opportunities, like buying a business, and how that can help grow. So yeah, we're shooting for 30 million this year. Obviously when, we've been working together, 10 plus years now, I think.
Oh, yeah.
15 or 16, we started working together.
The original Pins and Aces site, I'm pretty sure you built yourself and then you're like, hey, can you clean this up? And that's how we started working on it.
Even before that, you know, with the Adams days, I think you were, you know, instrumental in rebuilding that site and working together there. The Leno side, built that site. So we've been working together a long time. And yeah, the pin side I built myself. And the crazy thing was at Adams Polishes in 15, we were on Magento. And we were like, do we switch? What is it? Shopify was just kind of coming out. It was new. And we were looking at, I can't remember if it was like WordPress or Squarespace, I think it was, or Shopify.
Oh,
and yeah, and we're like, okay, so I think Shopify is the one. But Shopify makes it so easy. I mean, I was even having a conversation with, like, you know, at the end of the year, what are we looking at? You know, how can we cut costs? What's our budget next year? You're always looking at those things as we scale from building the site. And Pins and Aces started with $6,000. We've had no outside capital, no outside investment into the business and grown to this level. You know, it made it really easy to build a site, obviously, on Shopify. Now we do a lot more complex things like the bag personalizer, which is the thorn in your side.
It mostly works.
You know, those things, Shopify makes it really easy to do it, especially now with their AI tool. I'm like, hey, you know what? Let's look at Kurt. You know, we've worked with Kurt. Can the AI do everything Kurt can? And the answer is no. It's still not
yet,
quite there
so
yet,
far,
but it can do a lot. You know, I was playing around with Black Friday, doing the little ticker, the banner, and Till and Sidekick build this. And I'm pretty savvy and intuitive. Shopify is very intuitive for me. So it's great. You know, it's a great platform to grow and scale on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that, like, Shopify Sidekick and the various things it does, really useful. I mean, recently there was a Shopify flow that I had to set up for you. In version one, I just described it really well and Sidekick made it for me. Now it turned out there was a mistake in it and then I fixed it. But it's like, man, making that initial flow, I would have really like torn my hair out trying to get to the result that like mostly worked just on my own. And so having it do it, like, great, fabulous. You know, you get to the same result faster, I think, with adopting these AI tools. All right. So one of the things I love about you and working with Pins and Aces is your willingness to try new stuff, especially like new, you know, acquisition channels. And, you know, the big topic, the big fear for a lot of people is customer acquisition cost. You know, that keeps going up, and that's really like the bottleneck, the squeeze on a lot of these online-only businesses. Has this been your experience that the thing to fight here is CAC?
100%. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
So you're feeling that squeeze too, like everybody else, but what have you done about it?
Yeah. There's a couple things. I think it's really important. The guy from, I was at a thing in e-commerce summit thing in New York City end of last year. And the guy from Ridge Wallet, I think his name's Sean.
Sean Frank.
You know, Sean Frank. He's very direct and blunt, and he's a smart guy. And, you know, they sell a product with, everyone likes to talk about lifetime value. I think the last couple of years, people use CAC, a higher CAC or a growing CAC as, well, that's okay because we've got lifetime value. And I think what people see is you see a slow bleed, death by 1,000 paper cuts if you're focused on lifetime value. Obviously, you want to do that, but you can't justify your ad spend and hoping the customer is there for life. I mean, you know, that's like got to be a bonus. You have to be first order profitable with CAC. So you could say, well, my customer acquisition cost is $70. If your average order value is 65, but don't worry because they're going to come back and order. We're going to look at this cohort and they're going to come back and order. And now the customer acquisition is really 35. No, you don't know when that customer is coming back. You can have all the data in the world and everything. You don't know if and when they're coming back. And so if you don't have that, you just keep pushing out, you know, your cash burn. And all of a sudden it's like, well, where are our customers? They haven't come back, or not enough of them have come back. So being first order profitable is key and critical. And we have found having other channels to go after is really important for our business. And when we talked a few years ago, we were starting to get into wholesale and have more of an omni-channel approach, being in big box retailers, small mom and pop shops. We're a golf brand. So we get into green grass accounts like your local golf course or country club, having wholesale accounts. Diversifying that has been really impactful of having an omni-channel approach. But more importantly, just on the e-commerce side of things, new selling channels. So channels like Whatnot have been very impactful for us. District, live selling.
Interesting you brought up Whatnot. Someone else was just telling me about this too. Tell me about Whatnot's like a live selling marketplace, right?
Yeah, it's like eBay and Twitch combined. So you're live streaming and you're selling a product. So I'd be like, all right, you know, we've got this Pins and Aces Yeti. We're going to sell this, you know, okay, it's live, and start bidding. And people are watching and they're bidding and bidding. 10, 15 seconds. All right, sold. Next item, we're going to sell, you know, this phone case or whatever. You keep going. So for Pins and Aces, we've used it. Ironically, I'll tell the Whatnot story because it's crazy. Some guy reaches out and he's like, hey, I want to open a wholesale account. And we're very strict with who is allowed to sell Pins and Aces products. We don't want to have a bunch of e-commerce retailers selling, because now you're competing on ad space and they're going to advertise. We like to control the online channel. So this guy, hey, do you have a shop? No, you know, answers the questionnaire. No, not a golf course, not a shop, you know, not this. And his order was like $12,000. I'm like, why is this guy ordering all this stuff and he doesn't have a shop? And so I called him and he was like, I sell on Whatnot. Ironically, Whatnot reached out to us on Instagram, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't know anything about it. And I'm like, Whatnot? I just saw a DM from this company, Whatnot. We want to sell on Whatnot. So I started watching some videos. It was people selling Pokemon cards or baseball cards. But it was really interesting. They had a little small golf segment. It was mostly people selling secondhand clubs, used stuff. And so I said, hey, let's try it out and see how we can do on Whatnot. And the guy who is the wholesale guy, I'm like, hey, I'll hire you to come in and help us run a show, and I'll pay you just a fee to come in and kind of show us the ropes. And in our first show, we did $10,000.
How long was it?
Like 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, that works. That's like a great product launch.
It was a great product launch, you know? And so... So we started kind of figuring that out, and we're like, well, is it going to hurt the brand? Are we selling discounted? It's not full retail. The opposite has been kind of true on that. We're selling some products for more than retail value on Whatnot. There's a a component to, hey, we're going to give away a bag or a set of clubs to anybody who purchases in this time frame. So we've leveraged it a little bit differently than maybe the traditional sellers were on Whatnot. And we actually brought our brand to Whatnot. And from there, there's like a very loyal following, loyal customers that are now saw us on Whatnot first. They got the product. They loved it. Now they're coming back to our e-com drops and our launches. And now they're into the mix there. So it's been a great acquisition channel for us.
All right. I like that one. You mentioned drops. Tell me what the, is there like a consistent strategy you have or, you know, playbook for a product drop?
Yeah, there's really two, I think, when we can think of drops. So maybe three. We have our kind of core collection that's spring, summer, fall. Those are products that, hey, we're going to drop a spring collection. It's going to be available until the summer collection. Summer collection is going to be available until fall. And it's kind of available year round for your staples, your core polos, head covers, bags, hats. That's going to be available. Then we do limited edition drops. So we drop one over called the Augusta collection. We drop a 4th of July collection, maybe a Cinco de Mayo, Black Friday. And those are intended to be limited, and it's not a huge revenue generator for us. We don't want to, you want it to have the cool factor. Like, hey, this is limited. It's only available until it sells out. And once it's gone, it's gone. And so we have those. And those have been really good. And, you know, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. You look at it and say, man, we could have sold 100 more of those hats if we bought more of them. But it, that's not the purpose. You want the people who are buying it to be like, I got something limited. It's cool, this brand. And we've done power hours, as you know, where we go live and we drop this collection live, and it's available exclusively to the people in that 1 hour before it launches the next day or 2 days later. So gets this really, you know, demand built up of like, I got to be here because I don't want to miss it when it drops 2 days later. And so we've done a lot of that, and that's been really effective.
Here's some customer service emails you don't want to wake up to. I was drunk. This was a gift, but we broke up. Wrong color, wrong size, wrong me. Sound familiar? With Cleverific, you don't have to deal with these anymore. Cleverific gives your customers a self-service portal to edit their own orders. No emails, no back and forth, just simple fixes. Fewer support tickets, faster fulfillment, and happier customers. Peter Manning New York slashed their order support request by 99%. You can too. Get 50% off the Cleverific Pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for the unofficial Shopify podcast listeners. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Fix the problem before it's a problem. That's Cleverific. That Power Hour, that's live selling, and you were doing that before Whatnot. That was right. My introduction to live selling was your Power Hours, and where it's like it streams on a page in your Shopify store, and then people purchase through links there.
Yeah, and we found a guy, a company called Stream Agency. They've been great to work with, where we're streaming on our site for that. But before that, we were doing, and we still do, we're live on everything: YouTube, TikTok, Twitch, Instagram, all those channels. And we're using, I think it's like Streamlabs, where you can stream simultaneously to all the different platforms. And even like Twitch, like no one's following Pins and Aces on Twitch. We got like 10 viewers on Twitch, but you're building that, you know, it's 10 new eyeballs that otherwise weren't there before. So why not do it? You know, why not constantly engage on live? The lives have been really impactful. Whatnot has been great, but so is the TikTok shop. You know, we're selling live on TikTok, where we've got products in the TikTok shop. Anytime is back to your original question of how could we reduce CAC or think about it differently? Is, well, it doesn't cost anything to go live. We've already got the employees here. Go live and get, be top of mind. And now we're getting about 15 to 20 million impressions a week on our live platforms. And that means someone's not always watching it, but they open up TikTok, they open up Instagram, they see the spade, they see Pins and Aces live. They might not click on it, but then now they get served an ad or they see something. They're like, oh, I've seen that. That's familiarizing to me. Like, what is that? Okay, I'm going to click on it this time. So, yeah, they've been really impactful.
I've seen the numbers there. I think live selling, It is intimidating for people who are not used to it to go face to camera, like we're doing now. Like when you're new to it, the first time you do it, you're like, hey, we're going to talk to potentially hundreds of strangers. That's weird, right? But once you get over that, it unlocks a bunch of opportunities. And I think the one that is most missed by online stores is live selling. So it sounds like you're a big proponent.
Huge proponent of it. And it's, again, it's really a low cost effort. And, I think the biggest thing is you have to commit to it. We were trying to go live on TikTok and we do it for a couple of days and then stop. Oh, there's only 20 people watching. There's 30 people. You really have to commit to it and say, hey, we're going to commit every day. We're going to go live for the month. And we did that in the month of October to be like, hey, we're going to get the impressions. Ads are going to be heavy in November and December. Let's get it. And now that it started to grow, now 3 weeks in, we were getting 400 or 500 people in the live streams. And you get more comfortable at it. You get better at it. But nothing crazy equipment. Like, Whatnot's a killer channel, and we're using an old iPhone to do it with. You don't need any, no mics, just an iPhone, front-facing camera. And I think, yeah, a lot of people are probably nervous to go in front of camera. I get it. We were that way at first too. But nobody cares. You know what? You're afraid of somebody seeing you who, is going to make fun of you or judge you. Who cares? Like, I don't give a shit about what anybody thinks of me. And you got to have that mentality. You know, so many people are concerned about people they don't like, what they think of them. It's like, who cares?
I love the attitude. My version of that I tell myself, and I saw this on Twitter, is I'd rather be cringe than broke. Right. If 100%. You're so worried about being cool, you're probably not going to make money.
Yeah, exactly. And who cares? I see my buddy from high school. He started posting. He's a roofer in Texas and he saw us going live and he's like, I think I'm going to try this Instagram thing. And at first it was like pretty cringe and it was bad. And, our friends group is like, oh, look at him. He's, going live. He's doing these dumb videos. Well, now he's getting like brand deals. Now he's got tens of thousands of followers and he's into his zone and it's like, hey, he's hustling. He's trying something. Why not? Why not try it? So I'm all for it.
100%. Yeah. All right. So we're doing live selling. We're on Whatnot, live selling marketplace. I know you've had some success with TikTok and it sounds like some of this was accidental. Tell me about TikTok was pretty big for you, especially over the holidays, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you saw the numbers. I think in December, we did 400,000 on TikTok sales in December. And previous 11 months was like 200,000. So it really blew up in December, but we put in the work in October and November going live, kind of figuring it out. And I still don't understand TikTok completely. I'm still...
That makes total sense.
If there's a guy like you, Kurt, that knows Shopify backend and websites, but knows the TikTok, I think that's a great business to be in. Because I don't get it. We'll go live. People send us roses or cherry baskets or whatever. I don't even know what that is. I don't know what it is. But TikTok shop people are buying stuff on TikTok. And a lot of times, I have, I'm 35, 36. I'm 36. So I have employees that are 25, 26, and they are buying and searching using TikTok as like their Google and looking for a product or looking for it. And people are buying on TikTok. So it's a different generation. I think kind of back to on the website when we're like, hey, our conversion rate's low, Kurt, what's going on? Like, can we look at things? We were so into, this is how we see the site. It's easy for us to navigate. It's easy for us to do this, but what is somebody who's never been to the site before? What do they see? And where are their struggles? It's the same thing with TikTok. It's like, we're not buying on TikTok. I'm not doom scrolling TikTok. I don't do that, but people do. And there's a market there and you need to be there. So TikTok's been impactful. There's a great kind of affiliate network where you get all these creators to kind of post. They're posting for free. You send them a sample, then they link your TikTok shop and then people can buy from there. So it's interesting. I'm still trying to figure it out and navigate it. But it's been an impactful channel for us for sure.
So what's the content that you're putting on TikTok? Is it like ads? Is it organic? Or is it, is it influencer whitelisting?
Some of it, it's a little different. The influencer market in 15, 16 on Instagram was great. I could pay someone with a bunch of followers to post and we'd get sales out of it. Those days are like gone. And then it went to pay a Instagram influencer a big brand deal, pay them $5,000 a month, $10,000 a month, $2,000 a post, $5,000 a post. That doesn't really work anymore either. And you want to tie it to sales. So then it went to, well, here, use code CURT20 for 20% off Pins and Aces. Well, then people know you're just selling stuff. TikTok's a little different. You're selling stuff, but these creators are kind of doing their own whitelisting videos, but it's to their audience, how they would use it. So you get an influencer who, you know, hey, I'm going to send you a liquor stick or a beer sleeve or a head cover. How would you use it? They make content. Hey, if you like this head cover, you know, it's in, Lincoln is in my TikTok shop. So it's kind of a less aggressive sales pitch, but people are using TikTok to shop. So it's like going to Amazon and you're not Google searching something on Amazon. If you're on Amazon, you're looking to buy something. Okay. I need a pet brush. I need a lint remover, whatever. And the same thing on TikTok. You know, I want a golf head cover. Well, you search it. Pins is going to show up. Click on a video. Okay. That's a cool head cover. I'm going to buy it. So I think it's a little bit of a mix, but it's an interesting channel for sure. And still don't know it. I'm not the expert in TikTok. We're trying to still figure that out.
Yeah. Well, and I think at the same time, TikTok evolves. And even just recently with it, you know, going to US ownership, there's talk about like, okay, the algorithm's different. What's different? And so you're always just trying to figure it out and what works. The other thing I noticed that it probably doesn't hurt with a lot of the social content are your licensing deals. Like your original products, I think, are really cool. The original designs, I always love. But then you get some fun collab stuff. Like, didn't you have Taco Bell?
No, we haven't had Taco Bell. So we do. That's kind of that's kind of the third piece. Is like we have our main drops, then we do these limited edition drops, then we have collaborations that are either kind of mainstays like Yellowstone or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, South Park, and then we have like capsule drops, collaborations. Again, meant to be limited. Sell out. Last year we had a couple big ones with Hey Dude. Hey Dude did their first ever golf shoe through Pins and Aces, true collaboration. We worked on that with them together, dropped a golf shoe, dropped a line of products with them on our side. They did the shoe. It's amazing, fantastic. And then we do like licensing. So we did a license with Coca-Cola over November, December, which was really cool to do that. And we love doing those licensing collaborations. We always call them collabs. So some of them are true collaborative effort on both sides. Some of them are licensing like Coca-Cola, but you're getting into this demographic. Coke, for example, people who would never buy a golf product, but they collect Coca-Cola stuff. So they're going to get the head cover or the bag or whatever. So you're getting into this new audience. And what's helped for us is when we run ads on it, it legitimizes the brand. So Pins and Aces, while you've heard of it, maybe people listening have heard of it in golf, they've heard of it. But still, it's still a small brand. Not everyone in golf has heard of Pins and Aces. So if they see an ad or they see a product of Pins and Aces X Coca-Cola, they're like, oh, well, they must be legitimate if they're working with Coca-Cola and Coca-Cola is approving them to be a license or do a collab with them. So it adds legitimacy to your content, your advertising. People go to the site, they see it. They may not want Coca-Cola or South Park, but it reaffirms that, okay, they're a legit brand. They have an actual licensed product through this brand. They're legit. I'm going to buy this other product because I trust them. So it's helped
those collabs. Yeah, sometimes people's fear may be like the collab devalues my brand. And what you're saying is, hey, the opposite is true.
Yeah.
A brand that you are willing to license by definition has, you know, more cachet than you do and a different audience. Man, out of all these collabs, do you have a favorite or is this like picking a favorite child?
I like the Coca-Cola one. That was like one that I personally worked on. And that was a lot of fun to be able to do that. And Coke has been a part of golf in it for a long time. You know, they used to have staff bags in the 50s and 60s, guys, they'd sponsors. They've been involved in golf for a while. They hadn't done a golf bag in a while. So to do a golf bag, one of our best-selling products now, a Coke version of that was really cool. But they're all fun. I mean, I'm not a huge South Park guy. I don't watch South Park. But that's probably one of our best-selling collections is the South Park. And yeah, I've never heard anybody say it would devalue their brand. I guess maybe if you're working on a weird one, I don't know. But
yeah,
it's helpful maybe for not. Us. Yeah, it's helpful for us. And it's a different audience, especially on like true collaborations. We did another true collaboration with a company called Two Under, and they make underwear in the golf space. And we're never making underwear. Like, I don't want to get into that space. So partnering with them and doing a line of underwear, well, now we're overlapping their audience with ours and vice versa. And you're getting new customers into your fold. Talk about reducing the CAC. Well, now you've got a whole new audience who may not have heard of Pins or huge fans of 200. They're going to come into our brand, and now they're going to be fans and customers of ours.
So one of the other things, you know, we're talking about catalogs and merchandising and some of that product strategy. You've added golf bags. And what's interesting, what's difficult about the golf bag is it's very big. You know, it's a difficult thing to ship. But what's great about it is the price, right? Like, you're typically, you'd be selling a $70 polo or, you know, a $30, $40 head cover. A golf bag is $300+. And brilliantly, you're able to offer personalization, which I think really, you know, it's a nice add-on and it ups the perceived value of the product. But for sure, selling a more expensive item is a tougher sell. So yeah, just talk me through some of your thoughts on selling golf bags and, you know, what's that done for the business?
I think it's a crawl, walk, run. Honestly, when you're coming out with a new product, like a golf bag, we actually, Pins and Aces had golf bags 4 or 5 years ago, and they weren't the greatest, just being honest. Like, there's just some things that I wouldn't personally want in a bag. It was a little bit lower priced bag, $150, $200, which is a good market for a bag, but and they were like okay sellers, but then we had a lot of returns. The lining came out of it, a leg would break. And so we stopped selling them for a couple years. And then I'm like, hey, we need to get our average order value up. I think everyone looks at getting average order value up. And so a high ticket item does that. And so I said, we're going to do golf bags again. And everyone's like, no, please, no more golf bags. They take up a ton of space. They're expensive to ship, you know. They're expensive to buy. You got to put a lot of money and capital into buying golf bags. So a lot of problems with them. But I said, oh, we're going to make it right. We're going to do it right. So we did. We spent a lot of time, about a year, developing the bag, going back and forth, changing things. And again, the crawl, walk, run was, hey, we're going to bring in one container of bags. We're going to bring in 825 bags. We're going to commit to it and see how they sell. And they sold well. You know, we found a market. We always look at kind of blue ocean. Where's the competitive landscape in a product we want to come out with? The bags that we're competing against are about $100 more than our bag, the premium competitors. So we make the same bag, but for $100 less with some more features. And it did really well. Then it gets organically placed. People start using it, seeing it. And there's a good market for golf bags. And so people are looking, they come in and see Pins and Coca-Cola collab. They see South Park. Okay, they're legitimate. This looks like a nice bag. You've got a good PDP explaining why this bag is good, and people give it a try. And now if you get someone to buy a golf bag and that's your most expensive item, they're probably going to come back and buy other stuff. You know, they're like, okay, this is a great product. I know their other stuff's going to be good. It's harder to say.
Well, I mean, just anecdotally, like looking through some of those orders, when I see an order that's got a golf bag, almost inevitably it's going to have, you know, like a couple head covers stuck with it too.
Right. 100%. 100%. And having an upsell, being able to put your name on the bag or your logo, we do that in-house. We have in-house embroidery. We're doing that here. Yeah, it gets people into the fold, and those customers are a little bit more loyal. It's like at Adams. You know, if we could sell you a car polisher, you know, if you're buying a polisher, you're going to buy the detail spray, the polish, the towels, the ceramic coating. You're in the mix.
I need some buckets now. I got the towel. Yeah.
You got
it
everything.
Just keeps going.
Yeah, you got to buy everything to support it, you know? So it's the same, similar process with a golf bag.
I don't think we talked about Black Friday. You know, like your larger success, excellent. Black Friday 2025, how'd it go?
It went well. I mean, we hit budget. I think our ad spend was crazy. Everyone's talking about, like, you know, ad spend. Ad spend's always ridiculous in November and December, and you're trying to scale and scale and scale, and this one's working. Spend more money, which is good because you want to get all those customers in. You want to do it cost effectively. That's why we're doing TikTok lives every day, whatnot, Instagram lives, all this content. is supporting it. So that was it. But Black Friday was great. You know, we hit our goal, hit our target. And we were more prepared than ever this year than we were in previous years for Black Friday.
Was it your best Black Friday?
Yeah, I would say it probably was our best Black Friday. In terms of revenue, I mean, I think you saw the numbers, our best December ever, for sure. I think it's hard to judge, sure, top line revenue, more customers, all of it's up and up, and it was better than ever before. But the brand also grows. You know, I think a lot of people look at Black Friday and say, this is my saving grace. I'm going to make it to Black Friday. But you have to put the effort in May and June and July to achieve the results that you want to achieve in Black Friday. So we had a meeting earlier today about Black Friday 26. What are the products we're launching? What kind of campaigns are we going to do? It doesn't just happen overnight. You got to get the product here. You got to plan, you got to market, you got to have everything in a row. So when Black Friday comes, it's like, all right, it's here. Let's open the hay barn. You got to get the hay in the barn first.
Here's a word from our sponsor, Zipify. Hey, the holidays are over. Traffic's down, ad costs are still up, and you're staring at Q1 wondering how to keep momentum going. Here's the move. Stop leaving money on the table with every order. One-click upsell automatically increases average order value by up to 30% with AI-powered upsells across your entire customer funnel. Launch pre-purchase and post-purchase upsells for every product in your store in one click. Customers get personalized offers and spend more as a result. Unlike other apps, you only pay for those results, not views. It takes under 2 minutes to set up, and it starts working immediately. Q1 doesn't have to be a slump. Make every order count while you rebuild traffic. Go to zipify.com/Kurt for your 30-day free trial. That's zipify.com/KURT. And let's start the year profitable. You know, for whatever reason, metaphors that involve hay always stick with me.
Right.
Got to get the hay in the barn first. Make hay while the sun shines. You know, all favorites.
Exactly.
On, you know, we talked about TikTok, we're on the topic of Black Friday. One of the things we discussed offline that was surprising was how well mystery boxes did on TikTok. Like, I've always been a fan of, you know, ever since the Addams days, like the mystery bucket they would do. You'd get a bucket full of stuff. And I just love the concept of mystery bucket. But, you know, you did mystery boxes, a little more typical. But they seemed to do unusually well on TikTok.
There's two different things. And honestly, I don't know for certain, but I'm pretty sure when I was at Adams, we invented the mystery SKU. I think we started doing it in like 2014. Now everyone kind of has their play on a mystery box. But it did really well at Adams. And we always did it at Adams. It's like, hey, it's great value, but it's kind of, I wouldn't say slow and dead stuff, but we, you know, okay, we got a lot of these. Let's put these in a mystery bucket. Let's put these in a, you know, and whatever. And so to get rid of inventory. And it is a great way for businesses to have a mystery box, and people like the thrill of not knowing what they're getting and a deal. So Pins and Aces does it a couple of different ways. The mystery box that we do, that is a true, we do have a different spin on it. That is truly, it's never been released and it's never going to be released. So the only way to get these products is in the mystery box. And so your loyal diehards are getting something that they can't just go and buy, and we advertise it like that, and those do really well because it's like, hey, you don't know what you're getting, but you know it's going to be great value. We don't do them that often, and it's all limited stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else. So,
anyone that doesn't think these are going to be successful has never experienced blind boxes, you know, or like the entire culture around that. And there's just a cohort of people who love these. It's like, hey, I will pay for the surprise.
Yeah, and it's great. And so we want to always up that experience. Like this year, the mystery box was the big one. We did a couple over Black Friday, but the big one was a backpack and a hoodie, two head covers, two ball markers, pack of tees. It was a really, really nice, thoughtful, great value product that we did. And then on TikTok, we do these things called grab bags. So grab bags are like not completely slow and dead, but hey, we want to get rid of some of this inventory. It's a SKU that's maybe a summer polo that we have some extras of. And whenever we do this, we have a like if we drop a polo, we're going to do 1,000 polos and we're going to do the size run small through 3X, but we don't sell 1,000 polos. We'll sell 950 because you might order and say, oh, it's too big, it's too small, I need to exchange. So we need to kind of hold some of that. Well, once that SKU is done, we still are left with 50 to 80 polos. And so we need a way to get rid of those, but we don't want to put it back on the site and diminish the value or, you know, go with a huge sale. So we put it in a grab bag, and the grab bag is different than the mystery box. And so the grab bag was on TikTok, and that was a great way, kind of intro to the brand. Hey, you get a guaranteed piece of apparel, a polo, t-shirt, whatever it may be, a head cover and some accessory. And, you know, it's 50% off. $50 gets you 100+. And yeah, that just went viral on TikTok. There was a couple people who made posts about it. Again, the affiliates are like, hey, this is what I got. I wanted to try out Pins and Aces. It's a great way to do it. And a couple of those videos just went nuclear and good for us. And then, you know, bought from our TikTok shop.
You know, like, and that's the hard part with any, you know, dealing with any content that's distributed algorithmically is you really have no idea ultimately what will and won't succeed. So like, I'm sure you knew you would get some sales with this. Were you surprised by what you did get?
Yeah, it was great. We were like having our sales team in our conference room building grab bags every day. We were getting 300-400 orders a day for just the grab bag, and having the sales team like help the ops team prep them and build them, because it did just pop off and you don't know what's going to pop off and how it's going to do. So yeah, definitely surprised at that SKU.
Now, the one negative for a golf brand is that golf is seasonal. You know, at least in most of the country, it is here in the Midwest, it's quite seasonal. Is yet, you know, Pins and Aces sales really don't seem to be that particularly affected by seasonality. How the heck did you manage that?
Well, I think, again, going on an omni-channel approach, January was great, surprising. Our MER was marketing efficiency ratio, what we look at, was a little lower than what I'd want in January. I think ad spend was high, again, going back to got to kind of control those costs. So I think we look at it as having an omni-channel approach. Right now, we were at the PGA show in January, which is a big buying summit for all the golf courses. It's their Black Friday right now, February and March, January, February, March, gearing up for that, and then getting the orders out to the wholesale accounts to be in their shop by March, April, springtime. Is big, you know, having that in there. I also think the weather is like, I mean, it's 70 degrees in Colorado right now. It's nice and it's February. There hasn't been a ton of snow over in our area, which has been maybe for this year specifically. But to your point of like, how do you, you know, adapt to seasonality in a business is you got to make it fun and interesting and tell people, well, like, hey, here's a good time to buy. You're gearing up for spring. It's always spring's right around the corner, gear up for it. Or having an omni-channel approach where it's some months e-commerce is big in summer, but the green grass accounts and wholesale have already kind of bought for the summer. So it's slower in wholesale. So having kind of a diversified sales channel for those different months has been helpful for us.
I want to talk about wholesale. You know, when we talked 2 years ago, I don't think was really part of the plan. It is now. What changed? Like, what was the thing where you're like, let's get into wholesale?
I think so we had it, but it was never really, it wasn't like a huge, you know, channel for us. It's always been like 90-10. E-com to wholesale. This year it's going to be like 60-40, 40% wholesale. And I think there's going to be a world where e-com will actually not be the lead horse anymore. Our green grass and wholesale accounts will be. And it'll be 50-50 and then probably 60-40 wholesale to e-com in terms of revenue. And both channels are still growing, but there's a lot of opportunity with wholesale brick and mortar. And you see brands like The Honest Company and Traeger, they're abandoning e-commerce. They don't have e-commerce anymore. You go to their sites, like, hey, you can go buy at our wholesale partners. And I think that's because the customer acquisition cost is through the roof. And the barriers to entry in e-commerce is relatively low. If anyone listening wanted to go start a golf company, you could have a golf company up and running in a month. Go get some hats, get some polos, put a logo on it, start selling. Now, it's not that easy, obviously. There's a lot that goes into it, but the barriers to entry are a little bit lower. So thinking outside of the box, with e-com is really important, going back to these live channels and being top of mind. But yeah, we saw with wholesale big opportunity to support e-commerce and vice versa. So we had a big following. A lot of people follow Pins and Aces. They like the content. They know the brand. Then they'd go ask for it in their pro shop, and the pro shop would be like, hey, can we carry your product? And so the e-commerce is supporting wholesale in that sense. But now if we're in these brick and mortar, if we're in a Scheels or a Dick's Sporting Goods or a pro shop, someone sees the brand there. Maybe they haven't heard of it. They like it. Then they see the tag or the brand, and then they go and look at us online. Now they start following us. They see one of our drops. Now they're buying from us on e-com. So it's an ecosystem that is supporting both sides, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, having like that retail presence, yeah, you're selling that product, but now that's just even more eyeballs. It is more surface area, more impressions. You know, you're getting people into the marketing flywheel, even if they don't necessarily buy in retail, you know. And I know just supporting local retailers, also kind of fun and a little satisfying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so absolutely.
I mean, this whole thing, like we've done 45 minutes on all of your brilliant decisions. Hey, we got to humble you a little bit. Give me one thing that didn't work.
There's a long list of things that don't necessarily work. And I don't think you can be afraid to try something that doesn't work. For the most part, again, with the crawl, walk, run, if we're coming out with a new product, I'm not just going to go all in and say, I need 10,000 of these and I'm stuck with inventory. I think a lot of businesses or entrepreneurs make that mistake. Especially with a new product, we always talk about having a technical success. We want the product to work, but you need to have a commercial success. You might have the best idea, the best product in the world, but does it solve a problem? Do people actually want that? And then you don't have a commercial success. And that's when you get left with a ton of inventory that people don't want to buy. That can be a challenge. So for us, we've had those challenges in the past where we bought in a bunch of XYZ product and it doesn't move, or a design. I think for us last year is trying a bunch of different high funnel marketing campaigns, because we're like, the CAC is through the roof, Meta ads, Google ads. Let's do something different. Let's do podcast ads. Let's do this. Let's do that. And not really having a track and kind of wasting money on some of that stuff is a problem, you know, just different campaigns or different, hey, we're going to do a Sports Illustrated article. I don't know. Some of those is kind of broad and vague, but trying different marketing avenues that really didn't pencil was a big, pain in the ass for us last year.
Yeah, I imagine. But I mean, that is also what has been a big part of your success, is the willingness to just try things and see if it works. But of course, with that is when it doesn't work, or it's not obvious if it works, being willing to just, you know, walk away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have to do that. And I think, you know, especially in terms of staffing, if people listening to this are entrepreneurs, or they're starting to have employees, or maybe you have some employees. Look, I think I have employees that have been with me for 15 plus years in multiple different businesses. I have new employees who are phenomenal. But I think you have to understand what got you here isn't necessarily going to get you there. And so we had, you know, a guy running our wholesale program. He was great. He got us, you know, here, but he's not going to get us there. You know, the next step was taking wholesale from $2 million to $10 million. Is he the guy who's going to take us from 2 to 10? And I think if you want to scale, you can't be the nice guy. And you mentioned at the beginning, we're a family business. We are. My brother-in-law is my partner in the business. My other brother-in-law runs our marketing. My father-in-law is on our board. We've got a lot of friends and family in the business, but we are not a family business. I say that to our employees of, I'm not a family business. We are a sports team. Think of it as a sports team. We're a professional team. And, you know, you might be the starting quarterback this year, but next year you may not be. And so, Matt Butcher, who's at, Adams, who you've worked with, he ran track at University of Oregon, a very fast sprinter, Division I athlete. And he got there. He's the highest recruited sprinter in the country. Could go anywhere. He gets to Oregon. He's the big dog. You know, he's the fastest guy. And the coach said, my job every day is to replace you. Your job every day is to not get replaced. And so that's kind of how we look at it, is like, hey, just because you've been here We don't do raises based on longevity. You've got to add something. What else are you doing in the business? It's not just you've been here for 5 years and you get a raise. We want you impacting the business in a different way. So you've had to make tough decisions. We don't like really firing anybody in the business, but your role may change. And, you know, you might have someone who, yeah, you're running this role, but we're bringing in someone above you. We don't think you can get to the level. You're not getting fired. You're not, your position's not changing necessarily, but there's a, you have a new guy who's above you and you didn't get that position. So I think you have to be tough about that. Is it's really tough because, you know, you work with these people every single day. But if, you know, you want to keep your business lights on and you want to continue to grow and scale, sometimes you have to look at it and say, what got us here isn't going to get us there. And that's always tough.
Yeah, no, there's hard decisions, but you know, by the time you're at the point where like you're thinking about it and you're dreading the decision, you probably already know what the right answer is.
For sure. I think so. Yeah. And I think it's always, and you know, for the most part, we haven't really had to fire too many people. They are self-selected out in a sense of, I don't think when, sure, you know, it's always tough and tough to talk about, like, oh, I got to fire an employee. A firing should never come as a surprise to an employee. And if it does, you've done them a disservice because you're not working on with them to say, hey, you're a B player. We want to make you an A player. Here's how. And you put them on a path to either become an A player, or if they don't, they're really going to self-select out. They're seeing the writing on the wall. I got a new guy in here. He's doing better than me. You know, I'm going to self-select out. But if they do end up, yeah, having to terminate them, it's never been a surprise for me. I've never fired somebody and they were surprised, like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. And if it is, you've probably done them a disservice.
That's a good point and good advice. For someone who's got it, you've now been there. So for somebody who's like trying to scale, you know, 1 to 5, 5 to 10, what's your advice for them? Like, what would you possibly have done differently?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, we think about it. We think about it a lot. And I think most importantly, you've got to take care of, you know, the foundation of the business. I think you've got to continue to execute daily and, you know, doing things that maybe you don't want to do, you don't like doing, but you know, you have to get them done. Sure. Doing the fun stuff and playing a bunch of amazing golf courses and going on golf trips. That's all fun. And that's part of it, but you got to take care of the foundation. And I think sometimes when you're in scale, it's really easy, I think, to go from 0 to 1 million, 1 million to 5, 5 to 10. I think that's relatively straightforward. If you know you've got someone who wants to buy your product, you're starting to sell it, it's pretty easy to keep that going. Don't lose focus on, you know, the quality, the core, the pricing, whatever got you to that first sale. Well, what did that? Okay, we've got good organic content. We're high touch point with the customer. Don't lose that. And trying to do too much too quickly. You know, we've looked at a lot of different things like opening our own brick and mortar retail stores. I think that's part of the plan. But looking into that last year, really at the beginning of the year, we looked at it as like, hey, there's probably 9 or 10 other things we should do before we move to that phase. And so if you're trying to bite off more than you can chew or something you don't really know, and it's kind of a guess without, you know, calculated risk, I think that's when people really struggle and they end up going backwards or could lose the business. So I think it's all about organically scaling with where you're at. If you've got, hey, an opportunity to go from 1 to 2 million, great. Focus on that, then go to 5. Don't go 1 to 5. And I think too many people want to scale too fast. And I look back at pins in 20, 21, 22. I'm like, man, this was stress-free. This was fun. You know, didn't have a ton of revenue, not 40 employees, 3 or 4 people. It was great. It was fun. And you just kind of slowly build upon that. I think nobody, you know, especially in the TikTok world, this kind of applies to this and the influencer craze. I think Jeff Bezos asked Warren Buffett once, you know, you have a great portfolio. People can follow you, what you want to do. Why don't more people follow your investing strategy? And he said, nobody wants to get rich slowly. And that's true. Nobody does. Everybody wants to get rich quick, or they want, you know, the quick growth, quick scale, do all of this. I need the fancy camera. I need the new building. I need the expensive lease. You don't need any of that stuff. You need your iPhone. Start with that until you really, okay, I can't work any. I need a better camera, or I need, you know, this. And so Nobody wants to do it organically and slowly. They just want to do it immediately. And I think when that happens and you try and cut corners or do something out of your wheelhouse you're comfortable with, that can cause a problem.
Man, that's great advice. I think we end it there. If someone wanted to learn more about you and Pins and Aces, where do they go?
You can follow us on all the socials at Pins and Aces. I did make my personal Instagram public. I never am like that. I don't post too much, but you can follow me at NV Mertz. And then check us out, pinsandaces.com. If you want to grab some golf gear or follow us on socials, we're always on there on every platform. And it's pretty fun to watch.
And definitely check out the Power Hour and their live selling.
Nick, yeah, Mertz, definitely.
Thank you so much.
That. Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate it.
Hey, before you go, I was hoping you would check out our new app, Promo Party Pro. It is what I want to be the single best, easiest way to run a free gift with purchase promo on Shopify. We just put it live in the App Store. We've got less than 50 users. We want your feedback. So if you need to run a free gift with purchase promo in the near future, install it, try it. There's a live chat. I check that all the time. And so if you have any issues at all, you know, or any suggestions on how we can make it even easier to use, let us know. We're happy to help. If you want to try it, search Promo Party in the App Store. Promo Party Pro is the app. Give it a shot. It's got a free trial. Thanks.